Compassion Plans, Episode 7, Battling Misinformation, with Stephen Greenup of Rebutter.com.
The world we live in is far from perfect. How can I effectively make a difference? This is Compassion Plans, a weekly interview to help you make the world a better place with your host, Bentley Davis.
Welcome to Compassion Plans. I'm Bentley Davis, and today I have Shane Greenup from Rebutter.com. Thanks for coming to the show, Shane.
Thank you.
I like to start off the conversations by talking about compassion, which is about reducing someone else's pain. So, Shane, what pain are you passionate about reducing?
Ultimately, working on Rebutter, I think we're trying to solve a problem which is the root of nearly all pain. What we're trying to solve is the problem of the underlying disagreements that will have people believing different things and therefore choosing different courses of action which may conflict with one another. And this not only causes direct conflict, you know, like warfare, for example, is often caused by, you know, disagreements of beliefs and opinions of how things should be done. But politics itself, you know, is largely lots of disagreements. And it seems to me like somewhere along the way, there should be an ideal solution. There should be a better way to do things, which if only everyone had access to enough information, they could agree.
Right.
If we treated welfare this way, then we could actually feed everyone. If we made our laws work this way, then we could reduce crime to, you know, the lowest amount that possible, and so forth. So if we can have everyone understanding the facts as they stand and the outcomes of our choices, then we can reduce all pain, all suffering, and even ideally stop vilification, stop people from hating other people, because more often than not, that is a consequence of ignorance. It's a consequence of not understanding, of thinking you're different, therefore I am scared of you or I don't like you or
right.
It all comes down to communication, information, and understanding. And that is exactly what we're trying to solve in the world. So, yeah, all of it.
Right. Yeah, it seems like we're spending so much time arguing about the right thing to do. And when you listen to the arguments, especially like two talking heads on TV, it seems like they're talking around each other.
Yeah.
And you're not really getting at the facts. And it just seems like such a waste of energy and time. And it seems to be getting worse.
Yeah, for entertainment purposes as well. And this is something that's always really frustrated me about the whole live debates. It's been an entertainment staple for a long time, really. Like the live debate, I'm not sure has ever been particularly useful.
Mm-hmm.
But when you watch, you know, the news and live debates, this talking debate is so flawed where someone will stand up for 5 minutes or 10 minutes and make their argument and they'll become, you know, really articulate and have fantastic points.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll make three or four great points, let's say. And then the other person stands up and ignores the three or four great points and picks on the one or two soft points, which weren't really the key element. And they'll, you know, rebut those soft points really well. And everyone will remember, oh, they were great rebuttals, and completely forget that they've ignored the three or four great points that they should have been addressing. So this is one of the reasons why I think text, or at least video, like permanent fixtures, mm-hmm. you know, on the internet or in books, are so much more valuable for resolving these issues, because you can't so easily ignore arguments that are set in stone. You know, ones that are written down, they're there. So when you reply to them, if you aren't addressing all of the arguments,
mm-hmm.
then people can clearly call you out and say, but you've ignored the key issue here. But yeah, but when someone's talking, it's so easy to forget what they've said, or it's, you know, it's ephemeral, it just comes and goes.
And it seems like right now the people that are winning are the people who are not necessarily correct, but the people who are more eloquent or have more money to spend on getting people's eyeballs.
Yeah, definitely more money and an innate understanding of human psychology.
Right.
Yeah, not just being eloquent, but knowing, you know, I can ignore that and just point out that that person's, you know, didn't pay his taxes, therefore he's evil, therefore, you know, just ad hominem, using logical fallacies, which mm-hmm. work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yeah, so people that do that effectively are sort of the cause of all of our problems, because, yeah, they can make error become normal, and that really hurts us. It hurts us in ways that I think most of us are just unaware of most of the time.
So we've set the stage. We have this big problem. We're in the information age, and now we're overwhelmed. It's badly organized, and misinformation in some ways is winning. How does Rebutter combat that?
You set the stage perfectly. The information revolution has been amazing, and it does create this feeling that we should be further along than we are, right? Everyone has access to anything. There's this image I've seen on the internet a few times that says, in the age of information, ignorance is a choice. And it's a nice little placard, and it sounds right, but it's not, because just because you have access to information doesn't mean you have access to good information or to the truth or validity or that you understand how to assess the information. So what Robota does is organizes that information in a very strict way. We connect articles that make claims or take positions to articles that counteract those positions, that rebut them, that argue against. And by organizing it in this way, we can create idealized debates. So no matter what page you start on, any page on the internet is simply the first page of a very well-argued debate. Think of any claim. Climate change is very topical in society. So, you know, the first claim is climate change isn't happening. And then from that page, Robota gives you access to another article or a video, you know, information, which very precisely explains why the article that you've just read is incorrect and what the reality is.
Mm-hmm.
And then that page itself is connected to another counter argument to that page and so on. And so the idea is whatever argument you start off on, you have immediate access to a comprehensive and thorough discussion of that issue. So this resolves the problem quite well because it doesn't require us to take a position. Robota isn't deciding winners and losers. We aren't taking a position or telling you what to believe.
Right.
All we're doing is saying someone else disagrees with what you're currently reading. And if you click here, you can see why. And by clicking there and going and reading their argument, you are getting a wider perspective, an opposing position, more information, but more information that's very relevant to what you've just read. It's not just more information, because we contend quite strongly that more information isn't what's needed in general. The internet has enough information to achieve what we're trying to do. We just want to organize it so that when you access more information, it is relevant, it's useful, it's important. By doing this process regularly, we are reminding everyone to be critical of information you consume rather than just believing it, and providing a demonstration of how to critically analyze arguments. It's an education tool to teach people how to be critical thinkers.
Yeah, so let's get it a little bit more concrete. Let's say someone wanted to be exposed to this information, so they know that when they hit a website, they want to have the opportunity of knowing where there are rebuttals, where there are people that are saying contrary information specifically to what that page is on. So this is a browser plugin, right?
Yes, that's the ideal implementation of it. Is it's just in your browser. So we've developed it as a plugin so far for Chrome and Firefox and Opera. That's basically Chrome.
Right.
We've also developed a frame technology. So on any platform, on any device, you can be on a mobile phone. If you're looking at a page and you want to access rebuttals to it, you can just add rebutta.com/ to the beginning of the URL.
Mm-hmm.
So that's rbutr, easy to remember, rbutr.com/. And then it will reload whatever page you're looking at within our frame, and our frame will tell you if there are rebuttals.
Excellent. So yeah, so you can do it even without any sort of plugin.
Yeah.
But if they want the plugin, they'd go to rbutr.com and yep, click the button. I mean, they'd first have to be in Chrome or Firefox. It would download. And then anytime they're on a page, they could look up and see how many rebuttals there are for the page that they're on. I just think that's really helpful.
The plugin is ideal because you don't have to think of it. It just sits there and it tells you when you get a page that has been rebutted. Because particularly at this point in time, we're still a small startup. I don't know if many people realize this. We have no funding. It's just currently three of us working on it. We don't make any money from it. We don't have any investors yet. So this whole project has been something we've worked on for about 2.5 years, and we're just incredibly passionate about it. But it's a process. We've come a long way and we've achieved quite a lot, but we're still a small-time startup. At this stage, as you browse the internet, finding pages that have been rebutted is still somewhat rare, depending on where you go. So checking every page you visit by adding rbutr.com/ to the beginning of the URL is quite a task. But if you install the plugin, you can just install it and forget about it. And when you hit a page, it'll tell you. So it's a much easier system to use.
You mentioned there's three of you working on that. How much time are y'all able to put into this? If you don't have any funding, this is just pretty much volunteer work. Is it a couple hours a week? Or are you, some of y'all putting in 40 hours? Or?
So the three of us is different. I'm working on it full time. So I put all of my time into it. I'm lucky enough I had a small success in the past with a startup, a business that I ran. My co-founder is probably working on about part-time hours. He's working on another startup as well. Another friend joined us just recently. He actually works a full-time job, so he works around that. Yeah, that's why sometimes it feels like it takes forever to get things done. Looking back on how far we've come, I'm really quite proud of what we've achieved, particularly because I've seen so many other startups come and go in this sector. trying to do the web annotation, trying to do the internet correction sort of side of things, it's proven to be a very difficult problem to solve.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have the solution, of course. It's just a matter of surviving to see the fruition of it.
Right.
So it's a long game that we're playing, I guess.
Yeah, to get the momentum that it becomes an everyday item for more people, which one of the reasons why I wanted to invite you on the show is to hopefully spread the word of this. It might be good to give some specific examples. I thought we could pull up your most recent email, and this is also something good that you started doing recently. This is maybe like just the fourth or fifth email?
The eighth, but we're going to cut it back to every fortnight instead of every week now, because every week was a lot of work.
Right. It's still taking quite a bit of work. I mean, and it doesn't look too automatable. The first example is a little bit more maybe tongue-in-cheek, but what did George Clooney's mother-in-law say to the Daily Mail? And so, of course, you have the Daily Mail post, but then you have a USA Today where Clooney gives a response to that. And then value of organic food versus social perception. And then I did like this. You mentioned the $10 potato salad that is on Kickstarter. And the guy, at the time you posted this, had $59,000.
I think he's up to about 70,000 now. It's crazy.
And you mentioned that y'all are hoping to do a Kickstarter soon.
Yeah, has to be our next course of action because we've got to kick it up to the next stage. We've got about 20,000 active users, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
But we do need to reach to the millions. Ideally, if we can get a couple of $100,000, then I can hire the third team member. We can actually hire him to work full time.
Right.
And we've never really had a full-time developer on Rebutter. When we first started it, my co-founder put a lot of time into it early on. But if we can get a full-time developer now, then we've got so many ideas that are just waiting to be added that I can't wait to reveal. They take time. They just take so much time to develop.
And just some of the other examples so they don't think it's all kind of tongue-in-cheek. You have Antarctica is gaining a lot of ice. There's an article talking about how there's much more ice. And, of course, the implication you think of that is, oh, there's not global warming. But then the contradiction, the rebuttal to that is talking about how it's total, you know, square footage is seen by satellites, not in depth or thickness of the ice. Which was very interesting to see how information can be confused or easily you can be misled.
That author, treading in dangerous waters here.
Yeah.
As the representative of Rebutter, Rebutter must be neutral. Rebutter has no position and picks no winners. But I, as a person, have opinions.
Right.
It's interesting watching these rebuttals coming through Rebutter all the time because I keep a finger on the pulse and I watch everything that happens. That author of the original article, the one being rebutted in this instance, is a Daily Mail article by David Rose. And he has a history of writing articles like this. One that we've had through in the past is about the amazing rebound of the Arctic ice. It's rebounded 60%. That's the end of global warming. Look at how cold the Arctic is. But the spin that's put into that is amazing because, yeah, it rebounded 60% from an all-time historic low. It's like being a millionaire and losing all your money down to $100. And then someone giving you $60. Look, you just increased your wealth 60%. And this is why I think this concept of claim rebuttal is so important. Just knowing that the Arctic sea ice is at an all-time low is a piece of information that you can have. But then when someone comes to you and says Arctic sea ice has rebounded 60%, it sounds remarkable. It sounds like a huge victory. You know, it's the end of global warming or whatever.
Right.
But to get the full story of it, it's rebounded 60% and then have someone point out, this is intellectual dishonesty at an extreme level. No one looking at this information could genuinely say that, look, global warming is over because it's rebounded 60% when you understand the context. And the context is one of decades worth of decline and down to almost nothing. And then, yeah, 60% of nothing is still nothing. So, yeah, the full context just changes everything, I think.
And, yeah, and that's why this is such a great tool, because it makes sure that wherever you're on the web, if someone else had noticed that already, then it will pop up and let you know that there's more information that's important to what you're reading in order for you to make an intelligent, informed understanding of it. I do want to remind, in case I'm not sure that we made it clear, but every rebuttal in here is put in by humans. So you mentioned, yeah, did you say 20,000 participants so far?
Yeah, so that's according to the Chrome Web Store. They give us active users per week, and we're about 17,000 to 18,000, 19,000 over the past few weeks. We also have Firefox, which I'm less sure of the numbers of, but it should be in the order of 1,000 or 2,000 there at least.
So these are put in by humans, and of course, the rebuttals can go either way. So nothing in the technology makes this slanted.
Yeah, exactly.
It depends on, of course, the people that are using it, but its design kind of pulls that out because it shows you the information, good or bad, and lets you decide.
Yeah, this is one of the struggles we have. Some people don't like the fact that we are so neutral and are so willing to let misinformation and lies and people that are wrong have the same freedom to express their opinion as, you know, the people that are true. That, unfortunately, is absolutely necessary. This concept cannot work without that being the case. And the reason for that is because if at any point you decide, no, this belief, this idea, you know, let's say we didn't walk on the moon. Okay, lots of people actually believe that. They actually believe that we never made it to the moon. So if we decide, no, this idea is too silly, we won't allow that ever to be expressed in our system. What we effectively do is anyone who has that belief, we're telling them that they are inferior. They don't deserve to use our system because they're so stupid that they're wrong. That's what you communicate by picking sides.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of rebuttal is to be completely inclusive. We want everyone to know that, you know what, if you believe that, you have the right to believe that because you've reached that conclusion somehow. You should install our app. You should argue that position. Argue it to the best of your ability.
Right.
But just know that the other side has equal opportunity to argue back. And by allowing that to happen, either they will engage in the discussion around that subject and maybe find out that their beliefs weren't true.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they won't change their minds on that, but at least they'll have the plugin installed and will be able to experience debates on other issues that they're less sure about.
Right.
They will go through the process of discovering information and then having that full context provided by the system. And also sort of the side effect of being demonstrated how to critically analyze arguments and information.
Mm-hmm.
And so the objective is to have them installed for that reason, but have it work on them on a much wider basis than their particular topic of interest.
And I also kind of get the feeling that sometimes there's a topic that people won't even discuss, like the, you know, faking of the moon landing. And it seems like that if we don't even let someone say it, then those rumors seem to be even more powerful being passed around from person to person.
Yes.
And they can't find anything on the internet, which of course means it's a conspiracy. It almost seems like that if you're not dragging it into the light, it's almost like you're giving power to them. And I've seen that where a lot of times people will be arguing a point and they won't even bring up the topic that the other person brought up because they just think it's stupid. Well, the other half of the people out there heard it from the other person or are going to hear it in passing or going to run across it somewhere on the internet. If you don't address that, then you're feeding it.
No, exactly. You've expressed it far better than I did. that's exactly what I think as well. And you know, there is that odd saying, sunlight is the best disinfectant. So you're right, in my opinion. And lots of people disagree, and I encourage them to install rebuttal and argue their position.
What inspired you to create this?
It was actually a single event. I was on Facebook, of all places. I'm sure no one else has ever encountered this. Been on Facebook and articles come up. I read the headline and went, wow, that's amazing if it's true. And I don't know what inspired me, but I thought I'd actually click on the link instead of just reading the headline and believing it. And that was weird. So I went through to the article. So the headline was, new study shows that vaccination causes 2 to 5 times more disease than unvaccinated children.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, wow, like, you know, this is claiming it's a new study. So, you know, maybe this is an important breakthrough and, you know, we've been wrong. So I clicked through and read the article on Natural News, and they actually linked to the study that it was based on. And I clicked through, and the study was not so much a study as it was a poll held of internet visitors to a website called vaccineinjury.info. Being someone who's been trained in science and the philosophy of science, my major was in molecular biology. I had a basic understanding of how research is done.
Mm-hmm.
When I read this study and they said that they just had a questionnaire on their website and anyone that visited their website could fill in this questionnaire, you know, are your children vaccinated? How sick do they get? What sicknesses do they suffer from? Those sorts of questions. And they compared the results of this questionnaire on their anti-vaccination website to the CDC data for health of children. So now you've got one data set collected by doctors for no intended purpose other than accurate record keeping, compared to another set of data which is collected by people that don't like vaccinations. They have a particular bias in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So the study very clearly showed me that you can't compare those two sets of data. They aren't the same at all.
Right.
So the fact that they reached a conclusion that the self-selected biased group of people that said, no, then my unvaccinated child doesn't get sick compared to the generic data of medicine. And then they concluded that unvaccinated children got less sick. It's like, yeah, it was quite clear to me that there was a problem there. So anyway, I reached that conclusion and I understood the problems and I could have written a rebuttal to it myself. I could have sat down and written an article explaining what was wrong with the headline and with the original article.
Right.
So that I could show this to my friend that had shared the article and say, look, you've shared this article. You're telling people that vaccination causes illness, but the study you've linked to isn't valid. It's not true. You should delete it or you should correct it. You should make people understand that this is not true. But I didn't, I felt like I shouldn't need to write a rebuttal to it because someone else would have already.
Yeah.
I'm an avid internet user. I have been my whole life. I understand the internet pretty well. And I knew that if this article existed, someone had rebutted it somewhere on the internet. So rather than spending a couple of hours, you know, getting the data together to write it myself, I thought I'll just find someone else who'd done it and show this to my friend.
Right.
And that's where the idea for rebuttal came from, because I spent a couple of hours trying to find this rebuttal. And no matter how hard I looked, no matter what I searched on Google, you know, go to Google, type rebuttal of article title and things like that, I just couldn't find anything. And that's when I realized it's just so hard to do it. And all I wanted was a list of rebuttals to a page. And why can't I just have that handed to me?
Right. And to be clear, Google showed you a lot of responses when you searched for that, but a lot of them were linking back or describing the initial article, and you couldn't find any rebuttals to it because it was so widely spread.
The Hall of Mirrors effect, because what happens is the original blog that did this study issued a press release with it, and so because it goes to a press release, all of the websites out there that want to believe that just copy it unquestioningly. You know, it feeds into their narrative and they spread it. But don't want to single out this particular group of websites for having that. Just about every blog or whatever has their agenda and their belief. And when you get information that feeds into that agenda, then they all do it. You just put it in unquestioningly.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to spread the show the same way. So, you know, I'm going to get the show on as many websites as possible so that people can hear it. But yeah, it causes a difficulty to find these rebuttals. And that's why we needed a specific tool.
Yeah. And that's why, like, Google can't do what we do, you know, within their system. They need to tack on rebuttal. You know, they need to add this sort of a concept externally, because yeah, it's the intention, and this is why we can't automate it, at least not yet, because understanding that X page rebuts Y page is a very particular intention of the author. And if artificial intelligence can discern that intention, then that's a very high level of AI to be able to understand that, you know, abstraction of intent.
And we might get to that at some point in the future, but right now humans are much better at it, right?
Yeah, we're working on a couple of systems that will help identify possible rebuttals. And this is what I'm saying, the things I'm excited to release that just take time. They're really quite simple and elegant solutions to the problem. And we'll generate a list of possible rebuttals, which we can then just show people and go, what do you think? Is this a rebuttal? And then add them very quickly and easily. But to submit them entirely automatically is just begging for errors. And then it becomes annoying when you keep clicking through to get rebuttals that aren't rebuttals at all. They're just quotes or parodies or whatever, you know.
Have you done any development on this, or your skills elsewhere?
Yeah, my skills are elsewhere. I'm the everything else guy.
Well, awesome. That's important to have someone like that.
I don't think I understood just how important my role was until we've been doing this for 2.5 years, because you always get the impression of you have this great idea and all you need to do is make it, and then everyone else will go, wow, that's a great idea.
But it doesn't work that way.
No. Like, we get a lot of praise. A lot of people absolutely love what we're doing. We've got some, you know, an author for Inc. magazine called Rebutter a brilliant idea, and in an article, and he never spoke to us. He just heard about it on the web and then wrote up an article. And so we get like lots of spontaneous stuff like that happening. But in spite of being a brilliant idea that's going to change the world, it's really, really, really hard to get each individual user. You know, there's a lot of work to get in front of people and to change the habits that they have.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to convince them to take the time to go to your website, to press a button to install a plugin, which is something a lot of people are very reluctant to do because of the old Internet Explorer toolbar days when you end up with 50 toolbars and no room to look at the actual content. To get this to grow is actually very challenging. And yeah, I do an awful lot of work, interviews, but going and giving presentations. I write to so many people via email, trying to get in contact with them to to organize meetings or to you know, organize Skype conversations to find a way to work together. There's just so many opportunities, but so little time to actually act on them.
The people listening to this, some of them have their own ideas of something great that would help the world. What's a lesson that maybe one that you've even learned the hard way in the 2 years that you've been working on this that you can share that they might learn from you instead of the hard way?
The first thing that comes to mind is it's a lot of work. It's not very helpful though.
Well, it's good if they had know that up front, because they're less likely to start something and then abandon it.
Yeah, I think, okay, that's probably one thing that I've really come to terms with, and it's really sort of sunk in, is that the people that you see that make those differences, that, you know, you see the news stories on them that are like doing this amazing thing, and you're like, oh, I want to do that. I want to be that person starting that orphanage, or, you know, mm-hmm. starting that amazing idea. What you never get in those stories is just how hard they've worked and for how long to get to that point where they're interesting enough to cover. It does take, more often than not, many years of continuous work and being ignored. Like, there's this constant, you know, when you, I just mentioned before that I will reach out to a lot of people trying to get their support, you know, I'll email celebrities or, you know, people that are relevant within particular industries or areas.
Mm-hmm.
And vast majority of the time, I just get nothing back. I just ignored. So it almost doesn't matter how great your idea is and how noble it is and how you're going to fix the world. These people get contacted so many times on so many things that in all likelihood, you're just another person who is in the first week of, I've got a great idea and I'm going to change the world. And then mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, no one's got back to you. No one cares. You've achieved nothing and you're dispirited. And it's like, oh, I give up. If you want to actually do something significant and change the world, you have to be a little bit insane, because mm-hmm. it just doesn't happen. Yeah, it doesn't happen unless you ignore reality, because reality is telling you stop. No one cares. Give up. Doesn't work. And yeah, it's too easy to just to give up.
So in the 2 years you've been doing this, has there been any great things that happen that kind of spur you on or give that little bit of energy at a time where you feel successful?
Yeah. I do get quite regularly. I think I'm quite lucky. We have had quite a few regular little things, which at the time feel amazing, and they spur that confidence, even if they don't always pan out to give you what you actually hope. Our first one was just in the first week when we were still alpha testing. So we just developed it and we had like a small group of about 100 people sign up to help us test the idea out. My partner Craig actually emailed Ben Goldacre. He's a doctor and columnist in The Guardian. He's got his own blog called Bad Science. He'd written a rebuttal of something, and we added it to the system, and Craig emailed him and said, hey, we've just added your article to our system. You might be interested in it. And as a result of that email, Ben Goldacre tweeted it. He had 180,000 followers at the time. Wow. So we went from no one and nothing to suddenly having, you know, we had a few hundred people sign up that day. And so that was the first thing, like, wow, someone actually cares. So that was, mm-hmm. so as I was saying, you know, you write all these emails and no one, nothing. And then when one person does, and it was just a tweet. And these days, like, a tweet like that is sort of insignificant to us. It's not insignificant, but like the impact that it had then was so significant as opposed to the impact that it would have now.
Right.
Where we just, you know, we appreciate every tweet and everything that anyone does for us is always important. But it's sort of like now we need that to happen all the time just to maintain growth. But yeah, so back then that was very significant. And yeah, over the past 2 years, we've had lots of little things. The Richard Dawkins Foundation took us in last year when we went to TAM and have done amazing things for us. And we continue to get their support through Facebook posts and and things like that. And they've got like 1 million followers on Facebook, so that's quite significant. The James Randi Educational Foundation have been fantastic at supporting us as well, organizing the workshop. We gave a talk at the amazing meeting last year, which is happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
In Las Vegas. Skeptic Society. Michael Shermer agreed to be one of our advisors. And so they regularly, whenever we have announcements, they'll message it out to their email subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
All of these supporters that are there for us when we need to broadcast messages, really expand our reach. And that's really important. So your original question, yeah, each time that they said, yeah, we can help you out, that's very confidence building.
I may not be able to ask this question delicately. The skeptic groups tend to be on one side of the political spectrum, let's say.
Okay.
Are you finding trouble that being associated so heavily with that is, do you think that's going to make it difficult to get this used by a broad section of society? Or do you think I'm wrong in my initial assumption?
So on the initial point, the political spectrum, there is diversity in the politics of skeptics, but not extreme diversity. So there is conflict. It's sort of like my personal experience is they're either liberal or libertarian. So there's diversity. Yeah, there's conservative liberals or progressive liberals, I guess. There is some diversity. But what we have here is an issue of we have to be strategic in our growth.
Right.
We have to develop a user base. And like it or not, it's well established in any sort of community growth system that starting in a vertical, in a niche, in a specific area mm-hmm. is much more effective way of growing than trying to be everything to everyone.
Right.
So if we go out and say, hey, we don't care who you are, you should use Rebutter. And we do. We don't care who you are. Everyone should use Rebutter. Mm-hmm. But if that was our approach, no one would use it because it's not for them. People want to feel like something is for them. The skeptic community is, whether we liked it or not, the sort of community who loves what we're doing. They are the self-defined nature of the skeptic community is a group of people that care about fighting misinformation. They care about scientific skepticism. So it's actually right. a philosophical approach. And that philosophical approach is virtually what we're doing. So they are, like I say, whether we like it or not, they are the fit. They fit what we're doing perfectly. And so when we take right. it to them, they go, this is what we do. We love this. And they love it. So we have that community and we'd be stupid not to push it there and to get as many skeptics on board as possible.
Mm-hmm.
However, this does, of course, make it seem now like we are a skeptic community. Which we aren't. We are ideally, you know, we are a community for people that care about the truth.
Right.
And that can be anyone. Anyone can care about the truth.
And you could probably say that most people do because they do what they do usually because they believe it is the truth.
Exactly.
That's fairly universal in my experience.
Yeah, exactly. So nonetheless, if some people will come in and go, but you've got all these articles and they're all, you know, homeopathy bashing and say that ghosts don't exist and you can't speak with the dead and, you know, climate change is real and evolution is real. And we have a very particular bias in the directionality of our rebuttals, but not universally. We do have quite a few rebuttals saying that climate change isn't real, quite a few rebuttals against evolution and a few mm-hmm. others. So the content that we have is skewed, but for the people that look at us and go, we are a skeptic community, if ideally they shouldn't feel threatened by that because the way the system is set up, they can come in and submit their rebuttals to the current content
mm-hmm.
and they can't be voted out for that. You know, it's not like Reddit.
It's not a popularity contest.
No, it's not. For any given page, the rebuttal to that's going to be for the other side. You know, so if you're looking at a climate change is real page, the rebuttals to that page will be climate change isn't real, or, you know, this is incorrect on this basis. You can't stop that from happening. The system is designed to be claim, rebuttal, counter rebuttal, not claim, rebuttal, no, your side's wrong, so you can't say anymore. You know, it doesn't stop anywhere.
Right.
So what happens if you know, you want to support homeopathy and all of our articles are homeopathy is wrong, all of our current rebuttals are homeopathy is wrong, you can come in and add a rebuttal to the homeopathy is wrong argument and immediately have that counter rebuttal being presented to a captive audience of 20,000 skeptics.
Yep.
So if you've got a good argument, you have got a delivery system which will take that argument and hand it straight to the people whose minds you want to change.
And your argument has the same weight in the system as all the others.
Yeah, because our system doesn't in any... So any sort of weighting of the system, when it comes to the rebuttal voting and sorting that out, you're only compared to the other rebuttals for the given page. So homeopathy isn't true is an article, and then you have 100 rebuttals to that page, so 100 articles saying, yes, it is for these reasons. When you vote, you're just determining which rebuttal is at the top of that list of the 100. But they all agree with one another. But at the end of the day, it's still, because the idea is, you know, you and your 100 homeopathy appreciating friends have all added one article each, and you're trying to figure out amongst yourself which is the best argument, which one do we want to represent our side. So that's the only sort of weighting that you have. It's trying to find the best argument. It's not trying to find which side's right. It's trying to find the best argument to represent your viewpoint so that the discussion can proceed, so that the people who think homeopathy is wrong can then respond to your best argument. There's a concept in philosophy called the principle of charity. And I think rebutter automatically provides the principle of charity without you needing to do it. And that is, so the principle of charity is, instead of, if someone makes an argument, you give them the benefit of the doubt and you sort of, you take the position which makes their argument as strong as it possibly can be. Because if you just, you know, if they make a small mistake and you go, haha, you made a mistake, therefore you're wrong, and you hammer them on that and you win in inverted commas,
right?
You know, you haven't advanced anyone's understanding. You've just won, which is meaningless. The idea in philosophy and in what we're doing definitely is to try and actually understand the reality of the situation. So we want to find out. I don't want everyone to just go, oh, you know, homeopathy is stupid, haha, let's ignore it. I want the entire world to understand homeopathy. I want them to understand how it works and understand the arguments against that and so on, so that there's genuine understanding, not just a belief.
You're really trying to understand everyone's perception or everyone's understanding.
Yes, yes.
In order to really change someone's mind, you really have to understand where they are right now. Any argument you say without understanding their beliefs is going to miss the mark.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that a lot of people don't understand. There's a lot of times that we're using bad evidence to convince people of things. And because we're so sure that we're right, our arguments are falling on deaf ears because they've already heard that argument and they know that it's not an effective argument. And I think a system like this will clarify that, because we'll put up that rebuttal and then they'll rebut that. And they'll be like, oh, we shouldn't use that evidence. Let's notch that one down and let's put up the more important stuff, because we're wasting all of our time using ineffective arguments when we're discussing this.
Yeah, and it's very true. And I think wasting time is very much one of the objectives of all this, is just the amount of time and discussions that take place over and over and over again on the internet, on repeat. If we look at religion in particular, this has been happening for 1,000 years now. They've been making the same arguments, you know, like Pascal's wager. If I believe and there is no God, then nothing bad will happen. But if you don't believe in God and there is a God, you go to hell. So we should believe in God. This argument was made, you know, however many 100 years ago, and it's quite compelling, but it's been rebutted thousands of times, and it's really not an effective argument at all. But people continue to make it as if it's, haha, you haven't got an answer for this. It's like, well, yeah, we've got 1,000. It would be nice if every time it was made, if every time that argument came up, it was immediately connected to, you know, the globally agreed best response. And that way, the whole discussion could just be sort of fast-tracked. Every time someone thinks they're making it, it's like, well, here's the rebuttal. Oh, okay, then. And then, ideally, someone will come up with the best response to the rebuttal. Either it would just become resolved, and it'll become an artifact of history that we don't make that argument anymore, or maybe we'll, you know, attain a higher level of understanding rather than constantly repeating, you know, the same old entry-level stuff.
In worst case, we'll know we've tried our best. We could stop arguing on this point and maybe focus on some other thing, because it seems like a lot of time we're just banging our heads against walls.
Yes, very much.
So if you had a friend who had this great idea for a website or a task that they wanted to do to make the world better, like or better, what advice would you give them?
It's actually really hard to give advice on something like this. It is very dependent on your circumstances and what's available to you. With all this stuff, it is just a matter of just doing it. So I was fortunate, as I mentioned earlier, I had previous business that provided some income for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that gave me a bit of freedom to work without pay, you know, to just invest myself into something like this. So that's some advice.
So the advice is to be independently wealthy.
Yeah. That's usually the best advice you can give anyone for anything, and it works.
Right.
If you're going to work on something which doesn't make money, and even like most startups, even like viable startups that can make money, still don't make money. So whenever you're trying to start something new, it does take a lot of work without anything. You know, you get no compensation, no return for a long time. So I get back to that previously, you just be a little bit crazy.
Yeah. And that's even harder when you're doing something that you're hoping to fix or change the world, because, and there's a big thing about this in the startup world right now, is that if you can't find your audience for this target thing, or if you can't easily convince them what it is, you move on to another idea. But if you have a certain thing that you're targeting, you can still use that to a certain extent. But if you go far enough outside of it, you're no longer providing the benefit to the world that you want to provide. So we're a little bit more restricted in our options because we're narrowing it down to things that have a net positive impact.
Yeah, that example actually comes up with us occasionally. We'll talk to people about what we're doing and they're like, oh, okay, well, you could start doing, instead of just having rebuttals, you can have systems where people can add their reviews or their you know, pages that agree with. And I'm like, yeah, we could.
Good.
But it misses the point entirely of what we're doing.
Right.
And it's like, maybe that's more monetizable. Maybe it's more able to, you know, work as a business. Maybe it's more appealing to more people. Maybe. I'm not convinced of that. But, you know, like, there's suggestions like that. And it's like, maybe there's validity to them and maybe we should consider them. But it does start to dilute the intention and the purpose. And therefore, I think, in my opinion, the value of what we're doing. And this is the nature of all these sorts of startups and charitable endeavors that people go on. At the end of the day, it's the founder's vision and belief, which they're gambling on. So, like I said, you know, so many people have tried to solve the problem that we're trying to solve. At the moment, you've got Hypothesis, who's a nonprofit open source, you know, endeavor, and they've got quite a bit of funding. There's another company called FactLink who have a board of advisors, and I'm pretty sure they've got funding. I don't know how much funding they've got. And another one just came out in the last month called TrueClick, I think. I just met them over Twitter the other day, who also have this large team of neuro-linguistic programmers and lots of skill in their team. And I think they've got a bit of funding behind them too. So these are all plug-in-based correction services. They're quite different to what we do, though, because they highlight text on the page and they try and correct or evaluate the system, whereas we're much simpler. We are just someone somewhere else disagrees with this page.
Mm-hmm.
So basically my contention when I look at all these guys is I've taken a bet that what we're doing is right. I fully support every one of them. I want them to succeed because I want the same objective. I want the world to have an internet where you can trust the information you're reading, where you can get access to reality and to comprehension,
mm-hmm.
rather than risk, you know, being deceived or reading into bias. So we all have the same objective, and I want them to win. I just think they're doing it wrong because if I thought they were doing it right, I would be doing what they're doing. At the end of the day, it is your belief in what you're working on is the key, is the solution. And so with Rabada, I do a little bit crazily absolutely believe that we have got the solution to misinformation over the long term. And so that's why I will keep working on it regardless of anything. It's a, yeah, get that craziness thing.
What are two things we can do to support you or support Rubutter?
I actually made a page on Rubutter to answer this question. So I've got a whole list of things. If you go to the website and go to the FAQ, there will be a question, how can I support Rubutter? And click on that page and go and have a look. But the short answer is to help us spread the word. So if you know journalists or celebrities or, you know, people that have large followings on Facebook or Twitter, anyone that can reach an audience, if you can introduce them to Rubutter and convince them that it's the best idea ever and that they should support it, that has the biggest impact of anything, because getting the word out there is everything for Rubutter. We just need lots and lots of people to know about us and to use us. But otherwise, generally, install the plugin and be aware whenever you're reading a page which is a rebuttal, whenever you're reading an article that says such and such said this, but they're wrong because, that's a rebuttal. You should submit it. And everyone that submits that sort of content builds the network. And the bigger the network is, the bigger the impact is. The bigger the impact is, the more valuable the system is. And the more valuable the system is, the more people that will use it.
And I'll put a direct link to that page in the show notes.
Oh, great. Thank you.
It's great to see so many people out there doing so many great things. And I really appreciate the 2 years you've put into this and your continuing focus too, because I think it is something that can have a great impact on our world. I just want to say thanks for doing it.
My pleasure. I can't do anything else at the moment. I've tried. I can't. My brain's stuck.
You have the madness, as they call it.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show.
No, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And listeners, thanks for joining us. Get the links and notes for today's show at compassionplans.com/7. Never miss an episode by entering your email into our subscription list while you're there. If you appreciate what we're doing, go to compassionplans.com/appreciate to find out how you can spread compassion, like rating and reviewing this podcast on iTunes. Thank you so much for caring.